Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
Stephen Routledge tells us all about guitarist Steve Vai.
You know what I like about Steve Vai, Patrick?
What?
He plays all the notes. All right, Patrick, it's been a while, I think, since we've checked in with our friend in Scotland, Stephen Routledge.
That's right.
Because, you know, with the time difference, it makes scheduling a bit tricky, but we managed to work it out today. So today on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
Today's a patron episode with Stephen Routledge over there in Scotland. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Patrick. Good to see you again.
Hey, Stephen.
And patron episode, of course, means that Stephen gets to pick the topic. Okay, so what is the topic?
Well, we're going to talk about my favorite guitar player and people who've heard me on the pod and sort of my music submissions in the past will immediately think we're talking Neil Young. We are not talking Neil Young. Although he's my favorite artist, he's not my favorite guitar player in the sense of a technician on the instrument, a player of the guitar rather than a singer and songwriter, which is really what Neil Young is, who is also a good guitar player, and that's Steve Vai, and he sort of plays in a genre that I guess a lot of fans of the pod would probably not be either familiar with or would possibly dismiss as sort of a noodly shred guitar. I just call it instrumental guitar, but and so I wanted to talk a little bit about why I love him and hopefully introduce some both you and some of the listeners to the sort of delights of his music, because there are more connections to artists that you would like than mm-hmm. perhaps you might think when you just think of shred guitar. So there we go. That's the subject.
So Steve Vai and Neil Young, I think,
polar opposites.
Yeah, they sort of approach the idea of guitar in
playing style. Yeah.
Yes, differently. Right. Yeah. Like Neil Young, the master of the one note solo.
Steve Vai is not. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He occasionally plays more than one note. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Well, I gotta say, I'm really looking forward to this, Stephen. And mm-hmm, in my knowledge of Steve Vai is limited, but immediately when I heard the name Steve Vai, my first thought and my first encounter with him is, here's the hotshot guitar player that used to play with Zappa mm-hmm. and is now in David Lee Roth. Van Halen band, yep. Right? His equivalent of like, oh, Eddie's good, but wait a minute, I got Steve Vai. Like, I'm bringing in, you know, the real all-star, the real ringer, who was, I guess, I'm not sure if he grew up in California, but I know he was in Zappa's band at a pretty young age. So
well, yeah, we can cover some of that if you want. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, that is certainly how he came up. And then he went on to, I mean, he probably had more commercial success after that. And certainly his greatest achievements as a musician came after that period. But
yeah,
when I said, beforehand, you'll have heard at least one of his songs, because if you've heard Eat 'Em and Smile or Skyscraper, then you've heard Steve Vai. So, even if people aren't familiar with him, they've certainly heard him playing.
I want Stephen to go through sort of the whole story here, but to your point, Patrick, that is exactly my frame of reference too. I remember being, this Van Halen loving kid, and then David Lee Roth leaves the band, and then he recruits this guy who's, like Eddie, right? In some way, right? And that was totally my whole thing. Steve Vai, he can play like Eddie Van Halen. That was sort of all I knew. So, but I don't think it's that simple. So,
oh no.
Yeah, right. So Stephen, tell us about how you got into Steve Vai, and we can kind of go through his story, I guess.
Yeah, I'll tell you how I discovered and got into him, and then sort of maybe cover some of his sort of history and discography and stuff like that. I don't know if any of you ever saw it's a really bad film from the 80s. I think it's 1986. It was originally released. I didn't see it at the cinema. I saw it on the TV on a Sunday evening when I was maybe 16 years old, and this is the context to why I love Steve Vai, because I heard him at just the right time to blow my mind in a way that no one else had ever done with an instrument. And it's a film called Crossroads, and it stars the Karate Kid, Ralph Macchio.
I did see it years.
Yeah, the whole premise of the film is that the Karate Kid is basically a classical virtuoso at Juilliard. And then but he's really into the blues and really wants to play the blues. Right. So he decides to go and find Robert Johnson's old pal, Willie Brown, and play the blues for real. And then he tries to save Willie Brown's soul because he also sold his soul to the devil so he could play the harmonica. And they end up at the crossroads. And basically the devil says, well, I'll give you Willie Brown back, but you've got to play your guitar against my guy, Jack Butler. And if he wins, I get both of you. And if you win, then I'll let you have Willie Brown back. And Steve Vai is the devil's guitar player.
Right.
And that's the context. So the whole film, because I was into blues. I got into sort of guitar through blues stuff like Clapton and some sort of contemporary stuff that was coming out, like the Johnny Hooker Healer album and things like that, Robert Cray. And so I was into the blues. It wasn't that I didn't like it. I was totally into that. And say, huge Clapton fan, but I'd never really come across anything like Steve Vai until I saw this film, and I was like, okay, this blue stuff is good, but this is from another planet. And it's probably the same way that, you know, the scene in Back to the Future when they play Eruption on the headphones.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, what is happening? And so, yeah, I mean, the film is terrible because basically to beat Jack Butler, he has to revert to playing some Juilliard classical piece. And, you know, that's the kind of undermines the whole premise of the film, that the blues is great. It's like, right. Well, I've got to beat him with something that's, you know. Right.
Throw the blues out the window when it gets
exactly
down to it.
Yeah. But interestingly, with that, so in the film, basically all the guitar parts were played by Steve Vai, apart from the actual soundtrack to the film was done by Ry Cooder.
Oh, was it? Interesting.
And slight guitar parts. In the sort of excerpt, I'll probably suggest that you play, Jim. It's from a track called Head Cutting Duel, which is basically the start of them facing off in the film. And so you got Ry Cooder playing the slide guitar and Steve Vai kind of doing everything else. So that was kind of how I discovered him. And that's when I went, okay, I've got to get into this guy because this is unbelievable. Yeah, so you can see as a 16-year-old how, particularly, so you know, I hadn't really come across anything kind of playing like that. I was just getting into music at this time. I was quite late getting into music, and so I'd sort of started off with Clapton and the blues guys, and this was like my next step. I didn't, maybe if I'd found Van Halen first or found someone else first.
Yep.
You know, I might have been, but because it was in this context, I was like, my mind just completely blown. This is unbelievable.
Yep. I could totally see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how I found him. But sort of jumping back, as you both sort of hinted on, yeah, he got his big break. I mean, he studied at Berklee College of Music, and he got his break by, he started off with Zappa because he transcribed one of Zappa's sort of very difficult pieces and sent it into him, and then he eventually auditioned to play for Zappa's band, and then Zappa hired him to basically play what he called stunt guitar or impossible guitar. And yeah, he used to call him his little Italian virtuoso, which is ironic because Steve Vai's as tall as me, like 6'4". So, and he played with Zappa from 80 to 83. So, and this is why I wanted to kind of talk to him, because the fact that he started with Zappa is kind of key to why I think some of the listeners might like him, because the things that people like about Zappa, the weirdness, the esoteric nature, the kind of otherness that is in the music, Steve Vai's got that. He's not just what we just heard. He's just straight rocking out like shred guitar, but he does way more weird stuff than that. You know, he learned from Zappa as well as being his like hired gun hotshot guitar player as well. Right. You know, and so I think from Tinseltown Rebellion through to Them or Us, he played on those albums. Plus, he's on like a number of compilations, particularly Shut Up and Play Guitar and Guitar, and as you might expect, you know. But yeah, Ship Arriving Too Late and You Are What You Is, he's on all those albums. So if you got any of them, you got some Steve Vai, even if you didn't realise it, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, when he finished with Frank Zappa, and that, I think that was pretty amicable because he's played on plenty of Zappa tribute stuff over the years.
Yeah.
He briefly replaced another shred guitar player, a guy called Yngwie Malmsteen, who is probably the epitome of what people think of as like just a million notes a minute, you know.
Absolutely.
That neoclassical thing, which isn't really what Steve Vai does, but I mean, he can do it, but it's not what he does. And so that's quite a big sort of, you know, boots to fill. So he filled in for Malmsteen in a band called Alcatraz. And then, as you said, David Lee Roth recruited him for his band, which was an unbelievably talented band when he left Van Halen. And you know, so probably the most familiar that people are going to be with Steve Vai is something like Yankee Rose or Shy Boy or something like that, particularly Yankee Rose, where you got that talking guitar bit at the front. You know, that's Steve Vai doing all that on the combination of the tremolo or the whammy bar and the wah pedal, you know. And it's like, again, you're hearing this like what is happening. And I think, as you rightly said, when David Lee Roth left Van Halen, he's like, okay, Weddy's obviously, he was like the greatest guitar guy around at that time.
Yeah,
I've got to get someone who's better to show that I'm better. And personally, to my mind, as a guitar player, Steve Vai is a better guitar player than Eddie Van Halen by quite a long way. He's not as influential or as important in the history of guitar, but that's a different question, you know.
Right. If
you
ask different me metric.
If you ask me who's the greatest guitar player, then I'm going to say Steve Vai. Just period, you know, in my mind. But he's certainly not the most important guitar player, because that's a different thing, you know. But I think when he started with David Lee Roth, he was kind of like the new Eddie, and he kind of continued that sort of line of sort of great guitar heroes, like going from sort of Chuck Berry through Clapton, Beck Page, Hendrix, Van Halen, you know, and many others going on, you know. And he was like another one of, like, okay, this guy is the guy now, you know.
Yeah.
He's amazing. But he hadn't quite reached the point where everyone acknowledged that he was the guy, because that comes slightly when it comes along in 1990, when he released his second solo album. He had an album called Flexible just after he finished with Zappa. But then in 1990 he put out an album called Passion and Warfare, which I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. And the most famous track from that, and one that you definitely want to play, Jim, and it's probably after something from by David Lee Roth, is the one that most people are likely to have possibly heard at some point. Especially if they've played something like Guitar Hero. I haven't played guitar, but it's the sort of track that would be on Guitar Hero, I guess. And that's For the Love of God.
Thank you.
So what do you think of it?
I liked it. And I want to ask you about this. What I liked about it, I think, was the fact that the structure was amazing. I mean, you can definitely hear the roots of several different styles of music, and I liked that it unfurled. But what I, as sort of a bad, you know, passable rhythm guitar player, have always been amazed by is, and I'm not sure exactly how you do this, or much less how you record it, but to be able to play your guitar when, if you take your fingers off the strings at a certain point, it's immediately going to start feeding back. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you're playing in front of the amp or you're playing so loud, but when you listen to that, he's allowing just the smallest hint of feedback or even a little bit to start to creep in at the end of, you know, when the sustain starts to fade away or something like that. You know what I'm talking about, Stephen? Am I making sense?
Absolutely.
That to me is amazing. Like when you can control it that finely, it's incredible. I mean, anytime I've ever been able to do that, it's a total accident. You know, just I'm standing in front of the guitar, I turned it up too loud or stepped on a wrong pedal and it just suddenly started screeching. But you can hear that it sounds to me anyway like he's playing with that level of volume and control and sustain all at the same time.
And I read that he, you know, that he has this insane like practice regimen, right? Of like
he
10
said
hours
he did when he was coming up.
Like
yeah.
That.
No. 12. Okay. At least 12. Yeah. His practice regime was once published in like one of these Guitar World magazines. It's like, yes, the Steve, learn to play like Steve Vai with this 12-hour-a-day workout.
Right.
Okay, let me just give up my job and everything else in my life. Yeah, right. That's what you have to do to get as good as Steve Vai.
That's right. Amazing.
So there's that aspect, Patrick, I think, is that just that, you know, he's constantly working to perfect his craft, right?
Yeah.
And then there's he's a big sort of gearhead, right? I mean, he's very much involved not only in understanding the gear, but like improving it, creating. Like he works with Ibanez and equipment makers, right, to make better, you know, get better guitars and other gear, right?
He's part of the reason Ibanez became so successful,
right?
Because he played Charvel up to the time of a David Lee Roth band, then he went to Ibanez and, you know, the seven string universe and then other models, the Gem signature model, which is his main guitar, you know, that's been in production since then, and it's still, you know, like the sort of the premier kind of Ibanez guitar that you can
right.
get, you know, although you've got to have some balls to play a Steve Vai replica guitar, because you better be able to back it up if you step on stage with one of them.
But I think to your point, Patrick, about like he understands how sound is created and works, right, in a way that maybe other guitarists don't quite have that intimate knowledge of how.
Yeah, he's a very cerebral and sort of intellectual guy, as well as being into the music. But it's, and with that track, that touches on another aspect of him. He's quite a spiritual guy as well. I don't think he's overly religious, but he's very sort of spiritual. And the number seven is important to him. And track seven on his albums is always like the emotional core of each album. So
that
was
right?
track seven on Passion and Warfare. So if whatever album you're listening to of his, track seven is probably the key one.
Interesting.
He always like locks in on that. It's like the sort of the emotional sort of spiritual core of his record, you know, that he's putting together. Which is another, again, one of these just curious sort of quirky things that just you don't normally get. With like, here's some rock and roll, you know. I don't think Angus Young is thinking too much about the spiritual center of his next album, you know.
No, probably a different center.
Indeed, yes, indeed. So from there, from Passion and Warfare, that sort of launched him into like the sort of the pantheon of like all time great guitar players. And then bizarrely, the next thing he did was he played on the next Whitesnake album and talked with them on Slip of the Tongue. I mean, there's no need to play anything from that because you can find that if you want to. He was just really with them for one album and then moved on back to his and stayed sort of doing his own solo stuff. Since there was a kind of ill-fated band that was just called Vai with a guy called Devin Townsend on vocals. You familiar with Devin Townsend at all?
Mm-mm.
No. I mean, he's a very talented musician and very prolific. He's kind of like a sort of a more metal Frank Zappa in some ways.
Okay.
There will be guys out there who are familiar with him, I'm sure. But at the time, he was very young and coming up, and he was the vocalist. So the band is named Vai. Steve Vai is playing guitar. It's kind of like, everyone's going to see it. They're not, you know, they're not looking center stage. They're looking
right.
Steve Vai. Yeah. You know, that's a tough gig, a really tough gig. And so, yeah, that was, so skip over that album. That's not so great. But then he's, you know, he just continued sort of, he's not putting out stuff particularly frequently. He doesn't have the output level of Frank Zappa, but yeah, he's just kept put out solo instrumental stuff. There are some albums that it does feature some singing with him on, which, you know, there's some tracks that feature singing, but, you know, they're not really what you want Steve Vai for either. The stuff where he gets guest vocalists in can work better. And, you know, there's some, I think he's, although he's very much a niche musician, he's very well respected, I think, by other musicians. He's, if you try to find a list of all the credits of the different songs, soundtracks, albums he's played on, it's vast and innumerable. But for example, on his most recent studio album of all new material, Story of Light, Amy Mann duets with him on the song. So, I mean, we're not just talking like musos here, although she's a great musician, but you know what I mean? You're not, you know, indie people can dig Steve Vai too,
yeah,
you know?
That's interesting.
Very interesting.
And so, I mean, he's played with a lot of other tracks, but he's not a session guy in some of the way somebody like a Larry Carlton would be.
Yeah.
Because if you get, if Steve Vai plays in a record, you're getting Steve Vai. Right. You're not getting, this is not Jimmy Page pre-related Zeppelin kind of gig, you know? This is like, Steve Vai is on my record.
There's a big stamp on the record, right?
So he's done some interesting stuff. I mean, if you got kids who like Halo, they've probably heard Steve Vai play because he did the Halo, as you probably saw on that playlist there, Jim, he did the Halo 2 soundtrack. He played on that and then on the remix version as well. He features in the behind the scenes sort of footage of the making of that game.
Okay.
And you've got the sort of classical composer who does the soundtrack, Mike O'Donnell, who does the soundtrack or used to do the soundtracks for Halo. You know, because they're geeking out in the studio while Steve Vai's like shredding in behind the glass. They're like, Steve Vai is playing on our soundtrack. You know, it's like, that would have been me basically doing that, geeking out to the max. But and I guess part of me has always wondered why this sort of music and someone like Steve Vai isn't more liked by guys who like people like us, I guess, who like all this alternative indie and other stuff. Because I get it. If you're into punk, Steve Vai is not what you want to hear. And partly because I like stuff like Steve Vai and that sort of technical playing is why punk doesn't really do it for me. Punk is something I respect rather than I can enjoy to the same degree. Whereas I can just, when I saw him live in concert, it just blew my mind. It was unbelievable. But almost probably everyone in the audience was either a musician or the partner of a musician.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. You're not getting many casual walk-up right. fans. I see what Steve Vai, but you compare what he's doing to say like jazz, for example, it's not a million miles away. Mm-hmm. You look at someone like John Coltrane.
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Or Miles Davis. They were pushing the limit of their instrument and composition, but just in a genre that's perhaps more considered, it's cool because it's jazz,
Well, that's a great point, Stephen, because what I was going to ask you about, and I don't know how much you listen to John McLaughlin, but probably for me, what I'm hearing here and what I just was sampling a little bit before we were recording reminded me at least, I mean, I wouldn't say they're similar in very many ways, but the closest comparison I guess I could make for what I've listened to is like what McLaughlin did with Miles on Bitches Brew or Mahavishnu Orchestra, right? Or some of those electric guitar solo records he's made. And then the spiritual aspect of it is interesting too. But I don't know, does that comparison make any sense? But
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I'd say he's just got that. There's a something a little extra and out there that he has that a lot of his contemporaries and guys like Paul Gilbert or Eric Johnson or John Petrucci of Dean's Dream Theater, these are the guys, Shred guys that I do enjoy their music. Yeah, they haven't got that that same level of weirdness as Vai, and that's the kind of as I said before, that's the secret sauce, that I think makes him a little bit different, Music with weirdness in it is not something that scares, your listeners.
Right.
Yeah. So right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying to say to guys.
Makes
to
sense. People like, yeah,
give someone like Steve Vai a chance, because you want some weirdness in there rather than just getting your face melted. You're going to get that. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Some really weird stuff in there.
Yeah.
Okay. So was there another song we wanted to play?
Yeah. Well, let's play Tender Surrender from Alien Love Secrets again, because it does get to shred, but it's much more melodic and very jazzy at the start, as you'll hear.
Amazing. I love that.
And I can definitely hear the jazz comparison there for sure. I mean, that might as well be, you know, considered a jazz tune in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Well, yeah, certainly at the start. I mean, that is pure Wes Montgomery with the intervals.
Yep.
Just at the start, we're playing like that's just totally that classic Wes Montgomery style. So, but then as you could hear, he kind of gradually winds it up and then off we go into the stratosphere again. You know? So,
yeah. And even while playing that in the stratosphere, all of a sudden he drops that one little, you know, dropout in there where it just goes, then it goes right back up. And then, I mean, that's amazing.
His use of the whammy bar is extensive, and that's kind of one of the things that really makes him stand out.
Yeah.
In his techniques, and a lot of pre-bending. So he'll put the whammy bar down first before he hits the note and then bring it back up.
Oh, yeah.
And again, that's another
kind of reverse
innovations. Yeah. Because normally you had your tremolo that would just pull forward.
Yep.
So it goes, you just push it and it goes down. Whereas a lot of the Ibanezes that you can, they hollowed it out behind so you can pull it back up. Now, I think certainly when Eddie Van Halen started out, that wasn't, they got to that point eventually, but certainly went on his original sort of Frankenstein, I think that was still flat against the possibly, but so you can only go down. Whereas on the cutaway tight locking trams, you can pull up as well, and you know, really kind of, as you saw in that YouTube clip, you can totally abuse it at times. You know, almost holding the whole weight of the guitar on the if it's well made, you know, on the tremolo bar.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
The only thing I would probably caution to listeners is, you know, there's, as I said, there is a lot of weirdness on some of the albums. So a playlist is probably the place to start rather than just fight. Because even on Passion and Warfare, which is like his most well-known album, there's some, what is happening?
kind of right, right, yeah.
yeah.
So can you put together a playlist for us so we can put in the newsletter?
I've already started working on it, Jim.
Oh, fantastic.
Very good.
Yeah.
This will be a great one. Okay.
the primer. Yeah, that's what we need.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I figured that might come up.
All right. Well, let's get out of here. This has been great. This has really been
really
great.
Good.
I always love talking with people about like their favorite artists. I love hearing that passion come through. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And, you know, we'll talk with you again soon.
Yeah.
And... What else? Anything else, Patrick? I guess, you know, I would love to hear the listeners' take on Steve Vai or any other you know, sort of guitar virtuosos. I'd love to hear about people's interest in that. So the way to do that is call, leave a message, 612, this is US, 612-440-1984. There you go. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. All right. Let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Stephen Routledge.
Talk to you all Steven. Later.
And partly that's the reason I got this guitar, because it's actually a baritone length, scale length as well, which means because a baritone. So if your normal guitar is tuned to E on the highest, the outer two strings, a baritone would be A.
Okay.
But it actually goes down, plays lower. But what this means is because that's a low B, but it's a longer scale length, I can have that tuned to the low A, but it's still a 24 fret, so I can still have a 2-octave E at the top. So you can go from the baritone low A to a normal guitar top E.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Sorry, Jim, I'm melting your brain now.
Yeah.
But, yeah.